definitely want to do it based on what people have said was, good morning. Welcome to the Higher Education Innovation Workforce Development Committee. We're here with a varying cast of characters, a lot of other obligations throughout this session and throughout this this day. So I hope you will not take anything from that other than we're nearing the end of this quick session. We're glad to have Kay Erickson from the Employment Department and David Childers from the Talent Council back to give us an update on what's happening with the Talent Council Committee. You'll recall that this was one of the things we worked on during the regular session. I think it's fair to say we all care about what's happening, and we haven't been here in a while, so we're eager to hear your update, and we'll let you take it away. Please. Oh, and I need to officially open an information hearing. Thank you. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Chair Reed, members of the committee. I'm Kay Erickson, the Acting Director of the Oregon Employment Department. My co-presenter today is David Childers, who is the Chair of the Oregon Talent Council. As you know, the Talent Council was established during the 2015 legislative session, and we are happy to house and support it at the Employment Department. The genesis of the Talent Council comes from House Bill 2728 that called for not only establishing a Council of Industry Representatives, but to develop a talent plan with robust industry information and insights, make strategic co-investments in specific projects, and work with a wide array of state agency partners to further leverage resources and align priorities. All of the work of the Talent Council is based on the foundation that talent is defined as more than education. It is the combination of education, applied skills, and experience, and that's what turns knowledge into employee assets. Pardon me. I'd like to begin with a very quick review of what we've accomplished thus far, and then David will follow up with details of each of these key deliverables in a moment. You can see from the slide we have a lot to report considering the relatively short period of time the Council has been in existence. We also want to first recognize the work of the key individuals and organizations that have been a part of the work to date. The nine initial members of the Council, and I believe you have a handout that has their names in organizations, industry associations including the Technology Association of Oregon, Oregon Bioscience Association, Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute, and the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, and then finally, and with much appreciation, our staff and consulting team that have developed a high-quality talent plan, operating strategy, and grant proposal. So together in our first 4 months, we have accomplished the list of items you see on this slide. As you know, the mission of the Talent Council is to bridge the needs of industry to education and workforce. And our goals are to unite, catalyze, and transform the way talent is connected to the economic prosperity opportunities of the state. The Council builds upon the educational efforts of the former Engineering Technology Industry Council, fondly referred to as ETIC, by focusing on the direct connection of workers and students to jobs. To carry out our goals, we have four key objectives, and now I'll hand over to our expert, David, the chair.
Thank you, Kay. Good morning, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Childers, and I chair the Talent Council. As Director Erickson noticed, Talent Council has been very busy, and we've got a lot of information to share with you today. We've worked very diligently to validate the findings within the Oregon Talent Plan, and I think that the members of the committee recognize that legislation can often be a little fuzzy in terms of how you're supposed to react and respond to things. And I really would compliment back the legislature, in fact, that the addition of the talent plan and the response that talent plan has given us a clear mandate and a very visible direction for what the Talent Council can provide. We've also worked very diligently with, as Kay mentioned, higher education, the trade associations, the workforce boards, CTE, STEM, the HEC, and the workforce investment boards around the state to really validate what we're doing. And in your packet, there is, I think it's electronic for you guys, but it we have the executive summary that will give you some highlights associated with what we're doing. But as we said, our four really key objectives were to develop and really validate the Oregon Talent Plan. The next was to build strong alliances within the public and private partnerships so that we could align and optimize our resources and frankly avoid costly duplication. We're looking for direct co-investment in strategic niche and programs that fill gaps that frankly are inhibiting our employers from growing businesses and workers in Oregon from finding really good jobs. And ultimately, we're working to develop a very robust evaluation process so that we can know very specifically where we're getting the biggest bang for our buck and where we can cost effectively scale programs and then help redistribute those around the state. One of the things that needed to happen in terms of the plethora of activity around education and workforce was, excuse me, that the Talent Council needed to find its place, the where the Talent Council could be effective and not be overlapping or confused with other activities that are going on. And this diagram really begins to help you understand where we are. The Talent Council found its place as really being this primary communication conduit that sits between industry and education. And in our discussions all around the state, we find that higher education is starving for feedback and information from industry so that they actually understand the subtleties that need to be taught along with the curriculum. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. And very frankly, we have learned that employers feel I won't say disenfranchised, but they certainly don't feel part of the educational mix. So one of the things that we've been able to do at the Talent Council is begin to create communication that really truly bridges that gap and begins to close that aspect. And if I gave you an example of this that I think that we've really been kicking around is the fact that, you know, you've got the university system, you've got CTE, you've got the HEC, all the things that have been built to deliver this pipeline of opportunity. And we see the Oregon Talent Council very much like if we were laying broadband, if we were laying fiber, that you've laid a lot of fiber, but that last mile of fiber to really get where the rubber meets the road and people can actually begin to utilize all of those and begin to bring them together is where the Talent Council really fits. You're going to hear in our presentation today a lot of words like unite and be a catalyst, because we're really not bringing a ton of money to the problem. What we're bringing is communication and a clear direction to what we believe can make a difference in the way that the university system and employers can frankly play better together. I want to spend just a moment about the talent plan. The talent plan was designed to be an impartial look, if you will, at the state of employment opportunity, career demands in the state. It is a great document because not only does it look at where we are today, it begins to predict the trending. And having been an ETIC counselor before, one of the failures I think that occurred in ETIC was that it was often at the very tail end of when industry was screaming the loudest. We really weren't we weren't projecting and trending, trying to stay ahead of that curve. And we've worked hard at the Talent Council to make sure that we are really trying to be forecasting and looking forward to the things. And we'll talk more about that as well. We've looked at a variety of primary and secondary reports. The Employment Department has given us a wealth of information. As I said earlier, we've validated that with a lot of conversation with industry to make sure that what the actual statistics say or what industry is actually seeing and believing. And we've been able to use this as a very insightful and important tool. And as you start to look at some of the communication that's being delivered by the Workforce Investment Boards, by STEM, even by the HEC, you'll start to see some language that becomes very similar to what's being said in the Oregon Talent Plan as it begins to guide and direct. And I think that was one of the things you wanted us to do.
It is. I have a question that I'm struggling about whether to ask it now or later, but I'll just go ahead and ask it, and you can defer it if it's more appropriate later. I want to explore a tension I think I hear, which is on the one hand, your point about being more proactive, which makes sense to me, and yet on the other hand, your point about sort of the last mile, and there's a stat in one of the aspect or one page in the executive summary about people changing jobs every 3 years or so. And so if I'm understanding the point about the last mile, another way of saying that might be sort of the finishing school that kind of adds to the if the underlying elements of education are the infrastructure, this is the finishing school. So it seems like those are maybe two different things about forecasting and being proactive, but also being really responsive and quick. So maybe if there's a direct answer to that, that's fine. If not, maybe that's a theme you can try to touch on for the rest of your presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Reed. The answer to that is that it is a combination of both, and I think that the presentation as we go on will begin to give you an understanding of that. But one of the things that was very important in terms of the things that we looked at really comes back. I think this slide begins to play into what you're talking about, and as Director Erickson mentioned earlier, talent is not education alone. It is the skills that allow a worker to become productive, to actually be able to assimilate and to begin to understand and move through their job. Part of the other problem with that today is, as we look to forecast into the future, is also taking a look at two things, and I'll talk again about those later as a little bit more. But one is we have to look at what the retirement bubbles are to make sure that we're understanding what the trends are, not only in terms of jobs that are new and evolving, but jobs that are critical to maintaining the stability of our economy, because we may have a bubble of retirement. So we want to look at that as well. And that also then ties in the need to care for incumbent workers who are being challenged constantly with changing technologies, new tools, new responsibilities. So it is a broad brushstroke in many ways of trying to work through that, and I think that the analogy that I wanted to bring with the last mile was simply the fact that there are a lot of folks already ahead of us that have laid cable, they've laid trunks out into a lot of areas, and I agree completely, Chair Reed, with your point about finishing schools or ways to be able to take what people have learned from education and then begin to really refine that to where that they assimilate into the workforce smoother and stuff. I think all of those things are very, very important. And the Talent Council's role is really playing in that last mile of distribution. And that distribution is different, no differently if I were delivering broadband. Some people are going to need it at different widths and different sizes. But we're there to help figure that out and help distribute that all of the data and the value that's in that trunk, and getting it more where the rubber meets the road.
Thanks.
The thing that we learned from the talent plan, very frankly, was the fact that there are a number of things that happened. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about. The mix and ratios of skills have changed. I mean, if we look at a, if we go back 10 years and we look at the required skills and the ratio of those skills, and we look at today's skills, the mix and the ratio have both changed. Our workplace is far more dynamic, so we need people that can communicate and work in a web-based world. We all know that the majority of our jobs moving forward are going to have some tech STEM background behind them, and I don't care what industry that we're looking at in that. When it came down to it, what industry told us was that they were struggling with two things. They were struggling with quantity, and they were struggling with quality. And we broke that down into three sound bites as we began to talk about what the talent plan is really sharing, and that is that industry needs more, better, and faster. Now, more is that we just need more workers. We need a continuous flow of workers, and we need those workers to be completing and graduating with the skills that actually dovetail into what industry needs. But we really see that role going back to the, if you go back to the diagram I showed, that is really the responsibility of the HEC and of CTE and of STEM and others to really work on the more. There's not much that the Talent Council can do except be a guide and perhaps share information that can help them move along. Where we can really make a difference is in the better and in the faster. And the better is making sure that we're supporting programs like finishing schools or other things that can really augment the degree programs and be able to help students get better applied skills and industry connections, more apprenticeships, more internships. Faster means an investment in scalable systems that deliver knowledge and training so that workers can reduce their time that it takes them to get productive. And we've spent a lot of time with industry talking about that productivity power curve and how long it takes today for a number of workers to actually come into an organization, learn the language of the industry, begin to assimilate, understand how to report, and reach that level of productivity. And we drew that in this particular diagram. And you can see that the impact that we're planning to achieve at the Oregon Talent Council is to shorten that curve, is to really get through better programs, finishing schools, or other things along those lines, to where that workers are better prepared when they enter the workforce.
I want to pick up on one point, that phrase that you just used about enter the workforce. What can you say about the ratio between sort of new entrants, and maybe I'm putting too fine a point on it, or people who are already in the workforce, but for technology changes, economic changes, whatever, are retooling, retraining, trying to adapt.
Yeah, and there are a number of factors in that, and I have a slide later that I believe will share a little bit more of that. I think the thing that we were really looking at from the talent plan at the outset, and I think one of the beauties of the way that the legislation was crafted and certainly the way that the Oregon Talent Council has interpreted, we look at the talent plan as a living, breathing document. The executive summary that you've got is probably revision 5 in the last 4 months. So Chairman Reed, I agree with you. We may find that as we go through, we're not giving enough emphasis to incumbent workers. We may have taken the first read, and we need to begin to adjust that. But that's part of this ongoing process and ongoing dialogue. When we looked at the talent plan, and the talent plan came back and said there is a problem, there was a lot of feedback from all industry across the board that there was a loss of productivity and a drain for new workers coming in. And that drain hurt in two ways. The economics against this hurt in two ways. One, just that black line, if you will, from the time that you go along, that is it's a negative, it's salaries with no benefit for the employer. The other thing that they told us was that it also restricted in many cases them from hiring additional people because they couldn't seize an opportunity because the worker didn't get didn't reach productivity fast enough, and therefore they could have potentially hired more follow-on workers, but didn't get a chance to be able to work through that.
Is it too early to draw any conclusions about whether that differs as to whether the new entrant is someone straight out of school or someone out of an adjacent or entirely different industry? I would think that might vary some.
I think it's splitting hairs in many ways.
Okay.
The issue is that what we have learned, if I'm a graduate or a completer or a person that's transferring,
yep,
in any of those cases, I may have all of the appropriate skills, but I don't speak the language of industry, and we have been told by a number of more specialized employers in advanced manufacturing, as an example, that because different universities, based upon the fact that we all know that professors are tenured based upon their own research, that is, you often get 7 different graduates from 5 different schools who don't really have a common understanding of what the of industry language and how that's applied. And so coming back to the need for that finishing school or that apprenticeship or that intern process that prepares them better to be in a position to learn,
yeah,
it's really closing that gap.
Okay.
Where that you can go into a boot camp and, if you will, allow one of the things that we don't teach our students enough that came out in the talent plan as well, we don't teach our students how to learn from their mistakes. And so part of this boot camp is that come in, be part of a project, work in an agile environment, take it forward. If it doesn't work, kick it back down, push it back up again and stuff. Understand the language, understand the way, how to make a presentation of your findings. Those are things that help people assimilate faster and become more productive faster. It's not their actual engineering or book training.
And again, editorial, it sounds like that's relevant not only for new graduates but for people who are retraining. Representative Wisdom, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Childers, Representative Nierman and I are in this committee are really concerned about the cost of the debt of students. And Representative Nierman and I both agree that return on investment. I would suggest to you your last bullet there that you'd say increasing supply for current and future demand. That future demand may be a lot less than current. And if we graduate all these people that were here the other day wanted to be in game print programming or something, video game printing, that as we see ever year the technology changes so much, so we have to be concerned about the, you know, not only getting more of a supply, but if you get too much supply, that return on investment that they've spent and the industry everyone's spent is going to not be successful.
No, you're absolutely correct. One of the reasons that we also looked at this in a different way, as you look through when you look through the talent plan works in clusters as opposed to individual SIC codes to really look and to take into consideration a little bit of that bobbing and weaving that ends up going on in the real world. We're also looking at programs. I spent some time with a couple of the community colleges this last week, really looking at ways, excuse me, that we can help with programs to streamline and understand the waste stream that happens between community colleges and four-year. And I think you guys all know that there's a loss of credits along the way. They don't align very well. I mean, those are some things to talk about in terms of debt structure, is not adding another year to somebody that's worked hard in the community college. So, yes, we are looking hard at a number of areas to try to make education as streamlined and effective as we can.
Never heard it described as waste stream before, but that's good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've worked for years on trying to. There's different ways to reduce the cost of education. One is the deans and the professors limiting the required courses to the bare minimum to get the person qualified out into the workforce and learning on the job. They stack it up, and if you miss it one time, you've got another year to come back and pick it up, and that expands the cost tremendously. So, thank you.
Yeah, and Chair, wasn't one of the areas that we're really investing in? In fact, I have a lunch today with the CEO of medical and therapy online training company to begin to explore what the private sector is doing around certifications and keeping nurses and therapists up to date and currently certified, and whether or not those types of programs could be moved into a telemed environment in our community colleges and other areas where that we're trying to leverage private sector as well to keep those things moving. And one of the problems that I think that you all know for the incumbent worker is they oftentimes work a shift, come home, have to cook for their kids, and then they've got to drive to to Mount Hood Community College or to Portland to take a course. And we're really looking at ways that we can deploy. There is a lot of telemed facilities that the state has already built, or teleeducation facilities, the state's already, we already have them. Now it's just figuring out how to partner appropriately and to get the information where it's needed to be able to help with that cost, and the fact that we're lowering the personal burden of getting somebody the opportunity to be able to continue their education.
And that strikes me as the perfect example of what we had in mind with the Talent Council to help fill those gaps and help people be more adaptable and instantly
the system
flexible.
To adapt to the people too.
Yes. That's right. Representative Rudin, please.
I just wasn't quite sure when to jump in here, so thank you for all your work, and it's really exciting. I'm trying to get my head around how responsive can you be. So let's say, I'll really oversimplify, but you identify a need for a certain class or type of employer.
Right here on this slide.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, let me share this slide very quickly, and then please go ahead. But I wanted to share that the Oregon Talent Council focuses on three classifications. We look at high growth, high demand jobs. Those are the jobs that are really hurting us because we can't fill them.
Right.
Okay. Very honestly, today one of the number one impossible to fill jobs in our state, and we need it desperately, are computer-aided machinists, because we need them in the biomedical advanced manufacturing and all the stuff that's going on, precision cast parts and other, and we need more of those guys, right? The other are mission-critical. This goes back to two things that I mentioned. One is that this is ensuring that the existing economy is not impacted because we lose workers that aren't filling into a retirement. It also takes into consideration movement that we've talked about of incumbent workers, and it also takes into consideration those jobs where, if you look at the reports we have out of rural Oregon, where they can't get a physician's assistant hired, then they don't need another phlebotomist and they don't need two more nurses' assistants and so on, right? So if I can fill this job, I can potentially fill three or four more jobs underneath them because they're so critical in delivering services that I need to be able to hire more people in support. And then we look at what is emerging in the state as well. So, Rep. Rudin, please, I'm sorry.
I guess... How quickly can we respond? So once you've identified a need, how quickly can you adapt the programs to provide the training and that's necessary?
So
how nimble are we?
I very candidly, if we look at it from a pure education perspective, we're not very nimble because the curriculum process is a long and arduous process. But we have gotten a lot of excellent feedback from the universities in the fact that if we can help them understand specifically the skills and the needs, they can adapt to those fairly quickly without changing curriculum, without modifying the curriculum. And then I come back to the second thing that Chairman Reed talked about was the development of the finishing schools, so that as we're really staying current and giving new workers, incumbent workers, a place that they can go and refresh. Let me give you an example the best example that we're looking at right now is the Oregon Bioscience Association's work in BioPro and BioCatalyst. And BioPro is a finishing school for bio-related bio-related workers. And bio is everything under the sun, because you can take it from nanosciences to wave energy to agriculture to medical. The biology field is exploding in the state. So they have a finishing school that allows workers to, or new graduates to work in. In other areas, they have a program called BioCatalyst. And BioCatalyst was actually funded, I believe, a bit by the state. Their numbers are phenomenal this year in terms of the number of underemployed or unemployed workers that they returned back to industry. And if I remember it correctly, the average wage for the person they returned was $80,000 a year. So they took people that were underemployed, put them through a 9-week program of retraining and retreading their skills and polishing them to go back and re-enter the workforce, and they've done extremely well.
Wow. And to add to that, as I recall, something like $3,000 per person.
Oh, no, it's very inexpensive. Right? Yeah, it's, wow. it's very, very cost-effective.
Thank you. I have to go testify somewhere, but thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Rudin. Please continue.
Well, at the end of the day, this is where we are in terms of our funding strategy. We have released round one of funding, which was approximately $2 million tranche. Round one was dedicated primarily to public education related to the remnants of the Oregon university system in support of some work that needed to be cleared up, and we'll leave that where it is. Round two is wide open. We'll be launching this RFP right away. This is open to all universities, public, private. The community colleges have been actively engaged in this. It's open to workforce investment. It's open to organizations, anybody that can help us with the right stuff to start closing these gaps faster, we have the opportunity to look at that. So we are looking at how we can build, more importantly than we're trying to look at making a finishing school program, we're looking at how do we structure the methodology for an effective finishing school. Let's look at two or three of these, fund them, figure it out to where that we can then lay the feet out of this is a very good model that has proven results for a BioCatalyst or a BioPro type program.
Representative Wisnett, please.
Thank you. I know you're getting close, and I'm going to let you finish, but before I don't want to get the thought. I'm a very supportive, enthusiastic about what you're doing, but I see the Talent Council as really linking the workforce requirement and education. Education, the structure, it doesn't change. You know, we're funding you and you're representing the state. I hope that you'll get out there and work with the universities and talk about this stuff. We're getting ready. How many times has Oregon built a state four-year college? We're getting ready to build one in Central Oregon. I mean, that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, they're closing and we're building one. And I'm so afraid that we're building it like colleges in the 18 Chapel Hill 1780s. I mean, we're building these schools with brick buildings and all this stuff separated. We have an opportunity to spend this money for the future and not create another school like University of Oregon or all these, you know, chapel whatever. And do you see you having any role or way to change that and influence that? Have you met with Dr. Johnson? Have you met with Oregon State and talked about, let's don't build brick buildings with classrooms and professors. Let's use audiovisual. Let's use MOOCs. Let's use tele. It really blows my mind that we're building a university and we don't have a plan to make it the future.
I can only give you an opinion, sir. We're not going to change the four-year institutions very quickly. Let me tell you what we are going to change very quickly. The community colleges are thrilled.
They've always been able to see a demand and create a new program.
I have met with every provost and the majority of deans across the state in the 17 community colleges, and they're all very interested. They are interested in participating with each other. They're interested in sharing with the regional workforce investment boards and being able to look specifically at the needs within their state. I believe that where the Talent Council has to play in this is that we have an opportunity to create examples that work. that demonstrate a return on investment and demonstrate value to employers. And I would hope that maybe Adam Smith would come into play a little bit, that the more traditional universities would begin to wake up, that there was an opportunity for them. I don't think we can ever change that system. I was in a meeting yesterday in a totally different subject, and the to a person in there were five or six of us at OMSI that were working on a new project for OMSI's innovation cluster. And one of the areas that came up where we were all, each one of the people, the groups that were asked, it was consistent with every group that we had to change the educational system, that the methodology of educating had to change. And these are all business leaders across the city looking at that. So I don't think anyone disagrees with you in that. I don't think that we have a good chance of changing that. I do think we have a great chance of being able to work with a lot of group of people that are really interested. The Technology Association of Oregon is very interested. The food processor, bioscience, advanced manufacturing, all very interested. Community colleges are all very interested, and we believe the WIB will fall right into that, where we can really begin to demonstrate. And I think, you know, Chairman Reed, as you said, when you look at the numbers of what the BioCatalyst did for the small amount of money, and what the return is in turn, it's phenomenal. And we've got to be able to develop more of those programs and be able to, if you will, lay them at the feet of the university system.
I like the way you described that, and I appreciate your comment, Representative Wisner. One thing that I do like about this conversation is that it's resisting what, for me, is a very easy thing to fall into, which is this is a huge problem and how do we get started. I like the fairly narrow target in this. That is not to take anything away from your point. I wonder if you could, and this is where someone might say, you know, the objection's kind of leading the witness. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the criteria in this upcoming RFP and whether the notion of sort of scalability and using the bio example might be part of that if you're trying to create something that others can pick up and carry
thank
forward.
You. So in broad strokes, the criteria for the RFP is broken down into two types of investments. One investment is an investment in the development of a program that for all intents and purposes can be rinsed and repeated, that it's really looking for help us develop, and I hate to keep coming back to finishing schools, but help us develop a methodology that really demonstrates how you can spin up a finishing school quickly, be able to, who does it take to get involved, how do I make this productive, and how could I put 10 of these around the state. That's the goal for one side of the investment, which is not an ongoing investment. We're not looking at funding a program and then trying to feed that program ongoing. It's really looking at give us a program that we can rinse and repeat and demonstrate around the state.
Yes, I think that's worth repeating again and again, because speaking only for myself here, I think that was where ETIC got a little bit off track, that our point here is to focus on defined, discrete, catalytic kinds of things, not to create an entitlement that the legislature continues to invest in individual programs. I think hopefully we'll continue to invest in the Talent Council that will create the changing menu of things that needs to happen. And remember, the other thing that's important in all this is a little bit of an apology from me that we're grilling you on this sort of stuff. This is only a few months old, so this is good work in a short period of time.
That's
right. It certainly feels like it.
Yeah.
The second side of the investment, I think, is equally as important. Is that the second criteria for investment is to be a catalyst or to invest in a program that's shown that it has huge potential but hasn't been taken to scale. Uh-huh. So to be able to accelerate a program. So we might take an investment in, and I'm just going to stay on my one-trick pony of the finishing schools. We might find a finishing school that really has had a really good program, but they've only really serviced 25 or 30. Let's get them to the point where we can service 150, and do the results look the same? What does it take to get something like that to scale? So we're really looking at discrete programs that give us a rinse rinse and repeat, or something that we can demonstrate that with the right kind of funding and support, you can take it to scale and you can really make it work. And I think that comes back to Representative Reardon's comment about how quickly can we react and respond. We're really looking at investments that make sense. And if you notice into round two, after round two, we have dedicated $1.2 million of the funds the legislator provided us to really work in directed investment. That's a bit of the Oregon Talent Council listening, walking around, and maybe finding some things that we can actually look at and say, do you believe you could take this program to scale, and what would it take to do it? Because we believe you're doing very good work, and they may not be aware to apply for a grant and be able to make that work. So we're really trying to be not only open but proactive in terms of looking for programs around the state, looking for opportunities to where that we can get co-investment from a regional WIB and the community college and a four-year institution that's going to support it, and a local group of industries that want to make a difference in Yamhill County. I'm your guy, right? I mean, because those are the kinds of things that we want to be able to invest in, to be able to show that these types of programs could be run anywhere in the state, that this is not an urban, rural thing. This can be done anywhere, and we want to be able to continue to move through that. Our goals are really simple. It really is. Keeping up with the program, and I look forward to being here a couple of more times and telling you the great progress that we're making on that. We're going to finish round two of funding. We're building industry sector teams now to be able to, again, be able to have industry advisors to help us really understand that. We're working a talent index right now as well, to where that we can actually benchmark the talent requirements in the state of Oregon against other national groups and even states that are close to us, so that we begin to understand, statistics are great, but if you don't benchmark them against something, you really don't know if you're doing good, bad, right, left, up, down. So we're looking to make that happen. One of the most important things that this council will do is listen a lot. And we're going to establish some, we're going to drink a lot of coffee around the state as we listen to how our programs are working and talking to industry around the state and say, is this investment working? What could we do to make it better? And I've said this before this committee a couple of times. We are going to fail. I hope we fail on a couple of things, because that means that we're trying to do something that is going to make a difference, and we may miss that. But I hope I'm hoping that we're not so risk averse that we're not willing to invest a small amount of money in something that might be able to really drive some value in the long run. And with that, I'm happy to take whatever you'd like.
Great. I really appreciate the comment about failing. I think that's something we're not very good at doing intelligently and learning from. I know others are going to have questions, but one quick one. Could you talk a bit more about the you mentioned ROI several times. I think that's a really important concept. And the index, but what are they going to measure? What are the metrics beyond sort of cost?
So this is back to lessons learned. ETIC, if I'm using ETIC as an example, ETIC had tried to artificially create a set of ROI metrics that were consistent across all investments. That's impossible. We're treating this like we were a venture capitalist or a private equity group. Every program has to stand on its own. And one of the things within the RFP is that we're asking each person that submits an RFP to us is how should we measure success for this program? What are the outcomes? So we will have a certain level of standardization. Obviously, there are things that we look at in ROI in throughput and value for dollars and those are pretty standard in terms of that. But we are really looking to take each investment individually and begin to structure a set of published and defined ROIs for each one of those investments as they feed back into the overall investment strategy of a better and faster and being able to be a catalyst for change in the way in which graduates and incumbent workers approach the workforce.
Thank you. Representative Reardon, you had your hand up?
No.
Okay. Representative Wooten, please.
Again, thank you. The indexes. Are you going to consider Oregon niches, Oregon natural resources? In other words, we're going to create if we're doing this, we want to be sure that the jobs and the industry stay in Oregon if possible. So are you going to look at, you know, Oregon as natural resources of sea, technology, fishing industry, the Columbia River, timber, agriculture, and all those things? Is that going to play into your index, you think, or is that?
It doesn't play into the index, because the index is really based around other industry groups. It will work through various industry associations to where that we can actually begin to understand if specific clusters of programming jobs are harder to find in are they equally as hard to find in Austin, Texas as they are in Portland. So we want to look at that from a standpoint of how our statistics look and index against the others in terms of incumbent workers and graduating.
But we don't want to create these great talents and send them to Texas.
Yeah. So the other side that you look at in terms of that is that you, again, I want to come back and say we worked in clusters. And this was the point I was making earlier about bioscience. We have a couple of disconnects in the state. I've been working on another project to begin to educate and use the trade associations, and going back to OMSI, using OMSI as well, to begin to demonstrate when they make an exhibit of science, to actually have a pavilion that explains what jobs are associated with the science. So if you're a young person and you think this is really cool science, what kind of job would I have with that? Because they don't translate that very well. And we've seen that when you say to somebody, do you want a CS degree? And they go, no. And they say, would you like to build games or apps? And they go, sure, I'd love it, right? Because they don't connect that what they want to do is actually a CS degree. But when you look at clusters and you look at the impact that those clusters have, if you look at big data analysts, which is a premium job in the state right now, the reason it's a premium job is, one, is it's very specialized and fairly new in terms of where you're really getting value out of a big data analyst. But that big data analyst is needed in healthcare. They're needed in hardware manufacturing. They're needed in advanced manufacturing for workforce efficiency. We've got drones flying viticulture now, so we need big data analysts to be able to support the wine country. You've got all the new stuff that's going on in terms of climate change and wave activity in Newport. And there's got to be opportunity for jobs to spring up there. So when we look at these clusters, and again, that's why I said to you, we're not looking at SIC codes. I'm not looking at this and saying this person works right here. We want to be able to say that we have need across the state for this type, this cluster of jobs. And in fact, this week or next, we should have the top 10 jobs that I showed you in what cluster that they're in and what the requirements are and what the skills are associated with it. So it's almost like a job description or a job posting for it. But we wanted to be able to clearly convey what we meant by clusters and how that works. So, Representative Winston, I think it falls into what you're saying. If we're looking at the trends and we're looking at how the state evolves, and unfortunately we have urban versus rural, and we're also looking at equity and other things along the way as to how do we bring underserved people into this program as well. So there's a watershed of things that we need to look at. But I believe that the concept that we have of looking at clusters and not at SIC codes, to where that we're training people up, then industry will buy for the right people, and it will go that way. It would be short-sighted, I believe, for us to say we need to train people so that we can develop more wind energy or more of this or that. We need to look at what those core clusters of talent are in the state, and then let them go as the state demands.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Nierman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Childers, first of all, thanks for the presentation. This is pretty useful. You and Chair Reed talked about finishing schools, and when you were first talking about that, I thought it was a metaphor. But I think I'm wrong now on that. But can you give me an example of that? I'm kind of having a hard time of imagining what that is.
Yeah, Representative Nierman, we were talking about. So I hate the name finishing school. I think it's hard, but it's in the industry today, and nobody's found a better word for it yet, and it just keeps coming back to that.
That's your assignment for next.
Thank you for that, Chair. Yeah. One of the things that we talked about was in the Oregon Bioscience Association. So BioPro is today a finishing school that is run by the Oregon Bioscience Association, and they take graduate completers and incumbent workers and they put them in a program. It's very much like a boot camp. They're 5 weeks to 9 weeks long, and in that program they are immersed with other workers that are basically at their same level of talent. They bring in industry representatives. The Bioscience Association gets volunteers out of industry to come in and instruct and coach, and they're given a project that they learn to work agilely with to be able to support one another and understand how the chain of custody and handoff of work is required, and the guidelines of principal performance in terms of how you've got to work in the real world. They learn vocabulary that allows them to assimilate into that their industry faster, so they're able to hear and learn more effectively because they're in tune with the vocabulary and the language that is spoke in industry, and then they're returned. And there is very, very good statistical information now from that finishing school, and certainly the Bioscience Association is singing the praises of the work that they've been able to do and the importance that it's done. It has also then spawned more opportunity for apprenticeships, internships, and other things because industry is now actually more involved in the things that are going on. But those types of schools exist all around the country. They're not necessarily a new phenomenon. They're probably 3 or 4 years old in terms of that, but they're growing in popularity because of the identified gap that we're seeing as well in the aspect of getting workers to be able to become productive faster.
And if I could follow, and so these finishing schools or whatever, and I agree, we need a better term for that. I have this image in my head of a young lady working on her posture or something.
Yeah, it does sound kind of Jane Austen.
Yeah. But that's not very helpful. But these tend to be owned by industry then, rather than the educational establishment then, and. And you say they're growing. That this is kind of a new phenomenon. It's growing. Then so okay, good. Thanks.
And Representative Nierman, if I can throw that back, let me share with you where I see the Talent Council's role in this. One of the things that we want to do is unite. So the problem is that this finishing school exists in one location in Portland. If I'm working with two other community colleges that I can introduce into the Bioscience Association and be able to help fund the telecommunication or the video communication to expand that role where I can put five people in a high school someplace else in the state and take advantage of that, that's the type of catalyst that we're looking to be for these programs, which then might inspire the regional industry to then take on their own finishing school, and that goes back to our model of looking to try to create a definable, repeatable model of what a successful finishing school looks like, so that if industry somewhere else wants to pick that up, they're not starting from scratch. They actually have a pretty good chance of being successful because we're delivering a proven model that they can insert themselves into.
Thank you.
So unless there are other questions down here, I just have two last ones. And you started to answer, I think, my penultimate question here, which is what barriers are you observing to increased participation, maybe even led participation from industry? What's holding them back from doing this already? Oregon Bio has done it, but what's preventing them from going further? What's preventing other industries from learning from Oregon Bio?
Chair Reed, the interesting thing is that I think Oregon Bio, Oregon Bio has just really put more energy toward it. The Technology Association of Oregon has a number of programs within their six that are doing this, and the energy world has two different finishing schools right now. They are very specific. They're very narrow. So part of the concept is to go back to industry and say, yet again, let's broaden these out because they were homegrown.
Yeah.
And they've narrowly, and most of you come out of business and industry, the loudest voice in the room oftentimes controls the direction, right? And in the energy world, PGE has been a very loud voice in terms of that. So power engineers have done a really good job in terms of this. We have other areas that we can work through. I think industry is very open to this. It's having these proven examples. I think, again, coming back and saying, this works, there's an ROI here, this is what our statistics look like, and we're looking at that with the support of the Regional Workforce Investment Board that's really looking at that. I think there's real opportunity for us to get industry there. The barrier today is ignorance. And not stupidity, it's just ignorance. They don't realize that there is a better way of they know what they're doing today. We're telling them there's a better way to do that. There's a more robust way of doing it. And if they would move to that better model, they would see a higher return on investment and a greater throughput.
Well, and that's a good transition to my last question. Of course, I won't be here in the next session, but I hope I hope you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that's something the committee would very much like to see, more industry involvement, industry leadership. I know you're working for that. With that in mind, what would you like this committee and other legislators to keep in mind between now and the next session, the next budget? What are the themes that you've answered this throughout, of course, but what things do you want us to take away as we go back into our communities to talk about, to think about, and be ready for our next conversation?
Thank you for that. And I want to throw one thing back. I think that we recognize at the Talent Council the most important thing for us to do is get industry to the table. I mean, that is the most important thing for us to do. Yes, sir. There are a couple, three things. One is that we are very committed to be all around the state. So if you're approached by the Regional Workforce Board and they're looking for things to do and they're not and ask them if they're connecting with us and are we participating and working together in that regard. As you're talking to if you're talking to industry around the state and they bring something up, kick them our way. We would love to have the conversation and begin to do that. Part of what we're trying to do is unite and to be able to learn. So it's very important for us to be able to move into that direction and be able to understand some of the subtleties and the differences that exist. So it's really just keeping us top of mind because we're learning and we're really trying to figure things out. So the more feedback that we can get and the more opportunities that we can uncover, I think the stronger we'll be.
Great. I had a conversation like that with OMEP yesterday, and I was happy to hear that you're connected with them. So that's very good. I just want to express my appreciation and sort of astonishment the level of work that this group has done in 4 months. And you've had a long and illustrious career already. It seems like the way you're treating this like a full-time job, and we're not paying you anything.
My wife says that a lot.
Yeah. So thank you for all your work and all your dedication to this important task. I think the state is really going to benefit from it, and I'm grateful
for you
doing it. Yeah. Anything else from the remaining committee members? Okay, so we'll close the informational hearing, and we're back on Friday. We're going to hear from, in a more extended format, the Business Oregon, the Assistant Director for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, Heather Stafford, as you may remember, gave us sort of a preview of the innovation plan right before session started. They'll be back in a more relaxed setting so we can get into a little bit more detail in that. And we'll also hear from Portland Community College, wanted to update us on their efforts around the prevention of financial aid fraud. So we'll hear from them on Friday at 8:30. Anything else for the committee? That's it. We're adjourned. Thank you. That's it. We're adjourned. Thank you.